This is Audible.
Listening Library presents I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter by Erica L. Sanchez. Read for you by Kyla Garcia. Chapter 1. What surprised me most about seeing my sister dead is the lingering smirk on her face. Her pale lips are turned up ever so slightly, and someone has filled in her patchy eyebrows with a black pencil. The top half of her face is angry, like she's ready to stab someone, and the bottom half is almost smug. This is not the Olga I knew. Olga was as meek and fragile as a baby bird. I wanted her to wear the pretty purple dress that didn't hide her body like all of her other outfits, but Ama chose the bright yellow one with the pink flowers I've always hated. It was so unstylish, so classically Olga. It made her either 4 or 80 years old. I could never decide which. Her hair is just as bad as the dress. Tight, crunchy curls that remind me of a rich lady's poodle. How cruel to let her look like that. The bruises and gashes on her cheeks are masked with thick coats of cheap foundation, making her face haggard, even though she was only 22. Don't they pump your body full of strange chemicals to prevent your skin from stretching and puckering, to keep your face from resembling a rubber mask? Where did they find this mortician, the flea market? My poor older sister had a special talent for making herself less attractive. She was skinny and had an okay body, but she always managed to make it look like a sack of potatoes. Her face was pale and plain. Never a single drop of makeup. What a waste. I'm no fashion icon, far from it, but I do feel strongly against dressing like the elderly. Now she's doing it from beyond the grave, but this time it's not even her fault. Olga never looked or acted like a normal 22-year-old. It made me mad sometimes. Here she was, a grown-ass woman, and all she did was go to work, sit at home with our parents, and take one class each semester at the local community college. Every once in a while, she'd go shopping with Ama, or to the movies with her best friend, Angie, to watch terrible romantic comedies about clumsy but adorable blonde women who fall in love with architects in the streets of New York City. What kind of life is that? Didn't she want more? Didn't she ever want to go out and grab the world by the balls? Ever since I could pick up a pen, I've wanted to be a famous writer. I want to be so successful that people stop me on the street and ask, "Oh my God, are you Julia Reyes, the best writer who has ever graced this earth?" All I know is that I'm going to pack my bags when I graduate and say, "Peace out, motherfuckers." But not Olga. Saint Olga, the perfect Mexican daughter. Sometimes I wanted to scream at her until something switched on in her brain. But the only time I ever asked her why she didn't move out or go to a real college, she told me to leave her alone in a voice so weak and brittle, I never wanted to ask her again. Now I'll never know what Olga would have become. Maybe she would have surprised us all. Here I am thinking all of these horrible thoughts about my dead sister. It's easier to be pissed, though. If I stop being angry, I'm afraid I'll fall apart until I'm just a warm mound of flesh on the floor. While I stare at my chewed-up nails and sink deeper into this floppy green couch, I hear Ama wailing. She really throws her body into it, too. "Mija! Mija!" she screams, as she practically climbs inside the casket. Apa doesn't even try to pull her off. I can't blame him, because when he tried to calm her down a few hours ago, Ama kicked and flailed her arms until she gave him a black eye. I guess he's going to leave her alone for now. She'll tire herself out eventually. I've seen babies do that. Apa has been sitting in the back of the room all day, refusing to speak to anyone, staring off into nothing, like he always does. Sometimes I think I see his dark mustache quivering, but his eyes stay dry and clear as glass. I want to hug Ama and tell her it's going to be okay. Even though it's not and never will be. But I feel almost paralyzed, like I'm underwater and made of lead. When I open my mouth, nothing comes out. Besides, Ama and I haven't had that kind of relationship since I was little. We don't hug and say, I love you, like on TV shows about boring white families who live in two-story houses and talk about their feelings. She and Olga were practically best friends, and I was the odd daughter out. We've been bickering, drifting away from each other for years. I've spent so much of my life trying to avoid Ama because we always end up arguing over stupid, petty things. We once fought about an egg yolk, for instance. True story. Apa and I are the only ones in my family who haven't cried. He just hangs his head and remains silent as a stone. Maybe something is wrong with us. Maybe we're messed up beyond crying. Though my eyes haven't produced tears, I've felt the grief burrow in every cell of my body. There are moments that I feel like I might suffocate, as if all my insides are tied into a tight little ball. I haven't taken a crap in almost 4 days, but I'm not about to tell Ama in the state she's in. I'll just let it build until I explode like a piñata. Ama has always been prettier than Olga, even now, with her swollen eyes and splotchy skin, which is not the way it's supposed to be. Her name is more graceful, too. Amparo Montenegro Reyes. Mothers are not supposed to be more beautiful than their daughters, and daughters are not supposed to die before their mothers. But Ama is more attractive than most people. She hardly has any wrinkles and has these big round eyes that always look sad and wounded. Her long hair is thick and dark, and her body is still slim, unlike the other moms in the neighborhood who are shaped like upside-down pears. Every time I walk down the street with Ama, guys whistle and honk, which makes me wish I carried a slingshot. Ama is rubbing Olga's face and crying softly now. This won't last, though. She's always quiet for a few minutes, then, all of a sudden, lets out a moan that makes your soul turn inside out. Now Tia Cuca is rubbing her back and telling her that Olga is with Jesus, that she can finally be in peace. But when was Olga not in peace? This Jesus stuff is all a sack of crap. Once you're dead, you're dead. The only thing that makes sense to me is what Walt Whitman said about death. Look for me under your boot soles. Olga's body will turn to dirt, which will grow into trees, and then someone in the future will step on their fallen leaves. There is no heaven. There is only earth, sky, and the transfer of energy. The idea would almost be beautiful if this weren't such a nightmare. Two ladies waiting in line to see Olga in her casket begin crying. I've never seen them in my life. One is wearing a faded and billowy black dress, and the other wears a saggy skirt that looks like an old curtain. They clasp each other's hands and whisper. Olga and I didn't have much in common, but we did love each other. There are stacks and stacks of pictures to prove it. In Ama's favorite, Olga is braiding my hair. Ama says Olga used to pretend that I was her baby. She'd put me in her toy carriage and sing me songs by Cepillin, that scary Mexican clown who looks like a rapist, but everyone loves for some reason. I would give anything to go back to the day she died and do things differently. I think of all the ways I could have kept Olga from getting on that bus. I've replayed the day over and over in my head so many times and have written down every single detail, but I still can't find the foreshadowing. When someone dies, people always say they had some sort of premonition, a sinking feeling that something awful was right around the corner. I didn't. The day felt like any other. Boring, uneventful, and annoying. We had swimming for gym class that afternoon. I've always hated being in that disgusting petri dish. The idea of being dunked in everyone's pee, and God knows what else, is enough to give me a panic attack, and the chlorine makes my skin itch and eyes sting. I always try to get out of it with elaborate and not-so-elaborate lies. That time, I told the thin-lipped Mrs. Kowalski that I was on my period again, the eighth day in a row, and she said she didn't believe me, that it was impossible for my period to be so long. Of course, I was lying, but who was she to question my menstrual cycle? How intrusive. "Do you want to check?" I asked. "I'd be very happy to provide you with empirical evidence if you want, even though I think you're violating my human rights." I regretted it as soon as it came out of my mouth. Maybe I have some sort of condition that keeps me from thinking through what I'm going to say. Sometimes it's word puke spilling out everywhere. That was too much, even for me. But I was in a particularly foul mood and didn't want to deal with anyone. My moods shift like that all the time, even before Olga died. One minute I feel okay, and then all of a sudden my energy plummets for no reason at all. It's hard to explain. Of course, Mrs. Kowalski sent me to the principal's office, and as usual, they wouldn't let me go home until my parents came to pick me up. This had happened several times last year. Everyone knows me at the principal's office already. I'm there more often than some of the gangbangers, and it's always for running my mouth when I'm not supposed to. Whenever I enter the office, the secretary, Mrs. Maldonado, rolls her eyes and clucks her tongue. Typically, Ama meets with my principal, Mr. Potter, who tells her what a disrespectful student I am. Then Ama gasps at what I've done and says, "Julia, qué malcriada," and apologizes to him over and over again in her broken English. She is always apologizing to white people, which makes me feel embarrassed. And then I feel ashamed of my shame. Ama punishes me for 1 or 2 weeks, depending on how severe my behavior is, and then a few months later it happens again. Like I said, I don't know how to control my mouth. Ama tells me, "¿Cómo te gusta la mala vida?" And I guess she's right, because I always end up making things more difficult for myself. I used to be a model student, skipped third grade and everything, but now I'm a troublemaker. Olga had taken the bus that day because her car was in the shop to get the brakes replaced. Ama was supposed to pick her up, but because she had to deal with me at school, she couldn't. If I'd shut my mouth, things would have worked out differently. But how was I supposed to know? When Olga got off the bus to transfer to another one across the street, she didn't see that the light had already turned green because she was looking at her phone. The bus honked to warn her, but it was too late. Olga stepped into the busy street at the wrong time. She got hit by a semi. Not just hit, though. Smashed. Whenever I think of my sister's crushed organs, I want to scream in a field of flowers until I'm hoarse. Two of the witnesses said that she was smiling right before it happened. It's a miracle that her face was okay enough to have an open casket. She was dead by the time the ambulance arrived. Even though the man driving couldn't have seen her because she was blocked by the bus and the light was green, and Olga shouldn't have crossed one of the busiest streets in Chicago with her face in her phone, Ama cursed the driver up and down until she lost her voice. She got really creative, too. She had always scolded me for saying the word damn, which is not even a bad word. And here she was telling the driver and God to fuck their mothers and themselves. I just watched her with my mouth hanging open. We all knew it wasn't the driver's fault, but Ama needed someone to accuse. She hasn't blamed me directly, but I can see it in her big sad eyes every time she looks at me. My nosy aunts are whispering behind me now. I can feel their eyes latched to the back of my head again. I know they're saying that this is my fault. They've never liked me because they think I'm trouble. When I dyed chunks of my hair bright blue, those drama queens almost needed to be put on stretchers and rushed to the hospital. They act as if I'm some sort of devil child because I don't like to go to church and would rather read books than socialize with them. Why is that a crime, though? They're boring. Plus, they have no idea how much I loved my sister. I've had enough of their whispering, so I turn around to give them a dirty look. That's when I see Lorena come in. Thank God. She's the only person who can make me feel better right now. Everyone turns to stare at her in her outrageously high heels, tight black dress, and excessive makeup. Lorena is always drawing attention to herself. Maybe that'll give them something else to gossip about. She hugs me so tight she nearly cracks my ribs. Her cheap cherry body spray fills my nose and mouth. Amma doesn't like Lorena because she thinks she's wild and slutty, which isn't untrue, but she has been my friend since I was 8 and is more loyal than anyone I've ever known. I whisper to her that my tías are talking about me, that they're blaming me for what happened to Olga, that they're making me so angry I want to smash all the windows with my bare fists. Fuck those nosy viejas, Lorena says, waving her hand dramatically, shooting them eye daggers. I turn around to see if they've stopped staring, when I notice a dark man in the back crying quietly into a cloth handkerchief. He's wearing a gray suit and shiny gold watch. He seems familiar, but I can't place his face. He's probably my uncle or something. My parents are always introducing me to strangers and telling me we're related. There are dozens of people here I've never met. When I turn around, he's gone, and Olga's friend Angie comes running in, looking like she was the one hit by a semi. She's beautiful, but damn, is she an ugly crier. Her skin is like a bright pink rag someone has wrung out. As soon as she sees Olga, she starts howling almost worse than Amma. I wish I knew the right thing to say, but I don't. I never do. Chapter 2. After the funeral, Amma doesn't get out of bed for almost 2 weeks. She only gets up to go to the bathroom, drink water, and occasionally eat one of those Mexican cookies that taste like styrofoam. She's been wearing the same loose and frumpy nightgown, and I'm almost positive she hasn't taken a shower this entire time, which is scary because Amma is the cleanest person I know. Her hair is always washed and neatly braided, and her clothes, even when they're old, are patched, ironed, and spotless. When I was 7, Amma found out I hadn't showered for 5 days, so she dunked me in a scalding hot tub and scrubbed me with a brush until my skin ached. She told me that girls who don't wash their junk get horrible infections, so I never skipped showering again. Maybe I'm the one who needs to throw Amma into the tub now. Apa works all day, then sits on the couch with a bottle of beer like usual. In fact, he even sleeps on it now. It's probably molded to his body at this point. He hasn't said much to me this whole time, which is not that different from before. Sometimes he barely says hello. Could it be that my own father hates my guts? He wasn't that much more affectionate toward Olga, but she definitely tried harder. When Apa came home from the factory, she'd bring out his foot bath. She'd kneel down, place his feet gently inside, and massage them. They never said a word during this daily ritual. I can't imagine touching him like that. The apartment is a disaster, since Amma and Olga were the ones who did all the cleaning. We have roaches, but because Amma mopped every single day, it didn't feel that disgusting. Now the dirty dishes are piled high, and the kitchen table is covered with crumbs. The roaches are probably rejoicing. And the bathroom? It should be burned to the ground. I know I should clean, but whenever I look at the mess, I think, what's the point? Nothing feels like it has a point anymore. I don't want to bother my parents because they have enough to worry about, but I'm so hungry and tired of eating nothing but tortillas and eggs. A few days ago, I tried to make beans, but they never softened, even though I boiled them for 3 hours. I nearly cracked my teeth on one. I had to throw away the whole pot, which is a sin, according to Ama. I hope my aunts bring over more food. This is the only time I wish I would have let my mother teach me how to cook. But I hate the way she hovers over me and criticizes my every move. I'd rather live in the streets than be a submissive Mexican wife who spends all day cooking and cleaning. Papa hasn't eaten much either. The other day he brought home a brick of Chihuahua cheese and a stack of tortillas, so we ate quesadillas for several days. But we've run out now. Yesterday I got desperate and boiled some old potatoes and ate them with nothing but salt and pepper. We didn't even have butter. It's gotten so bad that I've started daydreaming about dancing hamburgers. A slice of pizza could probably make me weep with happiness. I peek inside my parents' bedroom, and the sour smell nearly knocks me over. A mix of unwashed hair, gas, and sweat. Ama, I whisper. No answer. Ama, I say again, louder. Still nothing. I finally step inside the room completely. The smell is so awful that I have to breathe through my mouth. I wonder if Ama is ever going back to work. What if the rich assholes she cleans for decide to fire her? Now that Olga is gone and can't pitch in, what are we going to do? I'm not old enough to get a job. Ama! I finally yell. I turn on the light. She gasps.
What? What do you want?
She says, her voice blurry with sleep. She covers her eyes with her hands. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. Please leave me alone. I want to rest.
You haven't eaten or taken a shower in a really long time.
How do you know? Are you here watching me every hour of the day? Your tía came by and gave me soup yesterday. I'm fine.
It smells terrible in here. I'm starting to get worried. How can you live like this?
Funny how my slob of a daughter is suddenly concerned with cleanliness. When have you ever cared about that before?
Ama has always given me attitude for my messiness, but this is unlike her.
Olga was the clean one,
she adds, in case it didn't sting enough. She has compared me to my sister every single day of my life, so why should I expect that to change now that she's dead? Olga's gone now. All you have is me. Sorry. Silence. I want Ama to tell me that she loves me and that we'll get through this together, but she doesn't. I stand there like a dope, waiting and waiting for her to say something that will make me feel better. When I realize she's not going to, I dig through her wallet on the dresser, take out a $5 bill, and slam the door. After searching every crevice of my room, I manage to find $4.75 in change. I'll be able to buy 3 tacos and a large horchata, which isn't much, but it will do. If I have to eat one more plain tortilla or boiled potato, I swear I'll cry. I slip out the back door to avoid Apa in the living room. Not that he'd even ask or notice. Now I have a ghost father and ghost sister. The taco place is bright with fluorescent lighting and smells like grease and pine sol. I've never eaten alone at a restaurant and it makes me nervous. I can feel everyone watching me. They probably think I'm a loser for eating alone. The waitress gives me a funny look, too. I bet she thinks I'm not going to tip her, but I'll prove her wrong. I may be young, but I'm not dumb. I order 2 tacos de asada and 1 al pastor with extra limes. The smell of fried meat and grilled onion makes my mouth water. When the tacos arrive, I try to eat them slowly, but end up inhaling them with desperation. Not only am I bad at cooking, I'm bad at being hungry. I'm always convinced I'm going to faint when my stomach starts to grumble. Each bite of the taco shoots a rush of pleasure through my body. I guzzle the bucket-sized horchata until I feel sick. When I get back home, Ama is in the kitchen with a towel wrapped around her head, drinking tea. She's freshly showered and smells like fake roses. She's finally ditched her nightgown and is wearing her white robe. The sudden sight of her clean and functioning almost scares me. She doesn't ask me where I've been, which has never, ever happened. She always wants to know where I am and who I'm with. She asks a million questions about my friend's parents. What part of Mexico they're from, what church they go to, where they work. But today, nothing. I wonder if she can smell the meat and onion in my clothes and hair. I can usually predict what Ama is going to say, but this time I'm not at all prepared. She takes a loud slurp of her tea, which always, always gets on my nerves, and tells me I'm going to have a quinceañera. My heart stops. Wait, what? A party. Don't you want a nice party? My sister just died and you want to throw me a party? I'm already 15. I must be dreaming. I never got to give Olga a quinceañera. It's something I'll always regret. So you're going to use me to make yourself feel better? Ay, Julia, what is wrong with you? What kind of girl wouldn't want to celebrate her 15th birthday? So ungrateful. She shakes her head. Plenty is wrong with me, and she knows it. But I don't want one. You can't make me. Ama tightens her robe. That's too bad. It's a waste of money. I bet Olga would have wanted you to help me with college instead. You don't know anything about what Olga would have wanted, she says, and takes another slurp of tea. Apa is watching the news in the living room. I can hear the news anchor say something about a mass grave found in Mexico. He always turns the volume way up when Ama and I are arguing, as if he's trying to drown us out. This doesn't make any sense. I'm already 15. Who's even heard of such a thing? I start pulling on my hair, which is what I do when I feel panicky. We'll have it in May in the church basement. I already called the priest. It'll be available by then, she says, matter-of-factly. May? Are you joking? I turn 16 in July. Why would you do that? You can't call that a quinceañera. I start pacing. I feel short of breath. You'll still be 15, won't you? Yeah, but that's not the point. This is so stupid. I shake my head and look at the ground. The point is having a nice party with your family. But my family doesn't even like me. And I don't want to wear a big, ugly dress. And the dancing. Oh, my God. The dancing. The thought of spinning in circles in front of all my idiot cousins makes me want to run away from home and join the circus. What are you talking about? Everyone loves you. Don't be so dramatic. No, they don't. They all think I'm weird, and you know that. I stare at the cheap replica of the Last Supper next to the cabinets. It's so old that Jesus and his posse are starting to fade into light yellows and greens. That's not true. Ama furrows her brow. Well, either way, you can't call it a quinceañera. Yes, I can. It's tradition. Ama's jaw tightens, and her eyes narrow in a way that tells me I'm not going to win. Where are you going to get the money?
Don't worry about it.
How can I not worry? That's all you ever talk about.
I said, it's not your problem. Do you understand?
Amma's voice gets quiet, which is even scarier than when she yells. This fucking sucks, I say, and kick the stove so hard the pans rattle.
Watch your mouth, or I'll slap you so hard I'll break your teeth.
Something tells me she's not exaggerating. When I can't sleep, I crawl into Olga's bed. Last week, Amma told me to never, ever go inside her room, but I can't help it. I slip in there after my parents have gone to bed, and then wake up before they do. I think Amma wants to keep the room exactly as Olga left it. Maybe she wants to pretend that she's still alive, that one day she'll come home from work and everything will be normal again. If Amma knew that I touched Olga's things, she'd probably never forgive me. She'd probably ship me to Mexico, one of her favorite threats, as if that would solve any of my problems. My sister's bed still smells like her. Fabric softener, lavender lotion, and her warm and sweet human scent I can't describe. Olga dressed ugly but smelled like a meadow. I toss and turn for a long time. Tonight, my mind won't shut off. I can't stop thinking about the chemistry test I failed yesterday. 24%, which is the worst grade I've received. Even an intellectually stunted monkey could get a better score. I already hated chemistry, but since Olga died, I haven't been able to concentrate. Sometimes I look at my books and tests, and the words all blur and swirl together. If I keep going like this, I'll never get into college. I'll end up working in a factory, marry some loser, and have his ugly children. After lying in bed for hours, I turn on the lamp and try to read. I've read The Awakening a million times, but I find it comforting. My favorite character is the lady in black who follows Edna and Robert everywhere. I also love the book because I'm so much like Edna. Nothing satisfies me. Nothing makes me happy. I want too much out of life. I want to take it in my hands and squeeze and twist as much as I can from it. And it's never enough. I read the same sentence over and over again and lay the book on my stomach. I stare at the light purple walls and remember the happy times I had with my sister, before we started to flutter away from each other. There's a picture on her dresser of both of us in Mexico. Our parents used to send us every summer, but it's been years since we've been there. Amma and Apa haven't been able to go back because they're still illegal. The two of us are in front of Mama Jacinta's house. We're both squinting and smiling in the sun, and Olga's arm is around my neck so tight that it is almost as if she's choking me. I remember that day so clearly. We swam in the river for hours, then ate Hawaiian hamburgers from the cart near the park. Most of my childhood sucked, but our summers in Mexico were different. We'd get to stay up all night and play kick the can in the streets until we were filthy and exhausted. Here, we would have been hit by stray bullets. Sometimes we'd get to ride my great uncle's beautiful black horses, and Mama Jacinta would spoil us with food, no matter how silly our cravings were. Once, she even made us a pizza with stinky ranchero cheese. Behind our picture is a poster of Maná, the terrible Mexican rock band that I hate because all their songs are about weeping angels or something equally lame. On the opposite wall is her high school graduation picture. Olga was a good student, so I could never understand why she didn't want to go to a real college. I've been dreaming of going since I was little. I know I'm smart. That's why they skipped me ahead a year. I was bored out of my skull in class. Now I get mostly B's with a sprinkle of C's, except for English. I always get A's in English. My mind usually wanders and gets lost in a tangle of worries. As I look around the room, I wonder who my sister was. I lived with her my whole life, and now I feel like I didn't know her at all. Olga was the perfect daughter, cooked, cleaned, and never stayed out late. Sometimes I wondered if she'd live with my parents forever like that sap Dita from Like Water for Chocolate. Ugh, such a terrible book. Olga loved her job, even though she was only a receptionist. What could be so fulfilling about filing and answering phones? The stuffed animals on the dresser make me sad. I mean, I know they're inanimate objects. I'm not an idiot. But I imagine them all melancholic, waiting for my sister to come back. Olga loved babies, the color pink, and peanut butter cups. She always covered her mouth when she laughed because of her snaggle tooth. She was a good listener. Unlike me, she never, ever interrupted. She was also an excellent cook. In fact, her enchiladas were better than Ama's, but I've never said that out loud. I know Ama loves me, and always has, but Olga has always been her favorite. Ever since I was a little kid, I've questioned everything, which drove both my parents insane. Even when I tried to be good, I couldn't. It's as if it were physically impossible for me, as if I were allergic to rules. Things just got worse and worse as I got older. Stuff that's sexist, for example, makes me crazy. Once, I ruined Thanksgiving by going on a rant about the women having to cook all day, while the men just sat around scratching their butts. Ama said I embarrassed her in front of the whole family, that I couldn't change the way things have always been. I probably should have let it go after a while, but I stand by what I said. Ama and I also argue about religion all the time. I told her that the Catholic Church hates women because it wants us to be weak and ignorant. It was right after the time our priest said, "I swear to God, that women should obey their husbands." He literally used the word obey. I gasped and looked around in disbelief to see if anyone else was as angry as I was, but no, I was the only one. I poked Olga in the ribs and whispered, "Can you believe this shit?" But she just told me to be quiet and listen to the sermon. Ama said I was a disrespectful huerca, that how could the church hate women when we worship la Virgen de Guadalupe? You can't ever win an argument with her, so why do I bother? Stuff like that made us hate each other, and Olga was always taking her side. They looked alike, too. They're both pale and thin, with stick-straight black hair, and I'm chubby, short, and dark, like Apa. I'm not, like, super fat or anything, but I have thick legs, and my stomach is definitely not flat. Oh, and my boobs are much too big for my body. Two pendulous burdens I've been lugging around since I was 13. I'm also the only one in the family who wears glasses. I'm practically blind. If I went out into the world with naked eyeballs, I'd probably be robbed, run over by a car, or mauled by animals. I read for a little while longer, then try to go to sleep, but I can't. I stay wide awake for what feels like hours. When I hear birds beginning to chirp, I get so angry I tug at the sheets and arrange the pillow over and over again. I feel something inside it press my cheek. For a second, I think it's a feather, but then I remember I'm not living in the 1800s. I sift through the pillowcase and pull out a folded piece of paper. It's a sticky note with the name of a prescription, Lexafron. Olga probably got it from the pharmaceutical people who always visited her office. On the back it says, "I love you." I stare at it for a minute, not understanding. Why the hell is this in my sister's pillow? My mind is leaping, my thoughts doing somersaults and backflips. Olga only had one boyfriend who I knew of. Pedro, a skinny little guy who looked like an aardvark. But that was years ago. I seriously don't know what she saw in him, because not only was he ugly, he had the personality of a boiled potato. Even though I was only 10, I often wondered what was going on in that little brain of his. Pedro was just as shy as Olga, so I don't know what they talked about. When he came to our family parties, my uncles would give him a hard time for being such a dork. I remember Tio Cayetano trying to give him a shot of tequila once, and Pedro just shaking his head no. Most of the time, he'd pick Olga up on Friday nights and take her to dinner. Their favorite place was Red Lobster. Once, they even went to Great America. How riveting. They dated for a year until he and his family moved back to Mexico. Oh my God, who does that? That was the last I knew about Olga's love life. I tiptoe to her closet and start digging through her things as quietly as possible. One box is filled with photos from school. Most of them are of Olga and her friends during science fairs, field trips, and birthday parties. She was in the science club at school, and for some reason felt the need to document every single moment. I mean, there's even a picture of her holding a microscope. Jesus, my sister was boring. I keep sifting through the box when I feel some clothes. I can't be prepared for what I pull out. 5 pairs of silk and lace thongs. Sexy lady underwear. The kind I imagine a very expensive hooker might buy. At the very bottom, I find skimpy lingerie. I have no idea what it's called. A nightie? A negligee? A teddy? Such stupid names for things that are supposed to be sexy. Why would Olga have this in her closet? Why would she subject herself to these forever wedgies when she didn't even have a boyfriend? Was this what she wore under her senior citizen ensembles? Olga must have done a good job washing them in secret because if Ama had found them in the laundry, she would have flipped the hell out. I have to find her laptop now. I have 2 hours until my parents wake up. I look everywhere, even the places I already searched. Finally, when I'm so tired I'm about to give up, I think to check the most obvious place of all, under her mattress. And there it is. Duh. I know guessing a password is probably impossible, but I have to make an effort. I try a few things. Her favorite food, our parents' hometown, Los Ojos, our dress, her birthday, and even 12345, which only a complete moron would use. Oh, who am I kidding? This is impossible. I go back to her dresser. There has to be something else in there. Her junk drawer is full of pens, paper clips, scraps of paper, receipts, old notebooks. Nothing even remotely interesting. As I consider going back to sleep, I find an envelope under a pile of note cards. It feels like there's a credit card inside, but it's not. It's a hotel key. The Continental, it says. Except for our trips to Mexico, Olga has never, ever slept anywhere else. Why would she need a hotel key? Angie works at a hotel, but it's called something else. The Skyline, I think. I hear someone open a door. Maybe Ama or Apa got up to pee. I flick off the light as quickly as possible and try not to move or breathe. If Ama catches me, she'll make sure I never get in here again. The next thing I know, I wake up to the sound of someone in the kitchen. My pillow is wet. I must have fallen asleep before I could set an alarm on my phone. Holy shit. Ama is going to kill me. I make Olga's bed as fast as I can and press my ear to the door to make sure no one is near when I sneak back into my room. Amma must have been wearing ninja shoes because when I opened the door, there she is with her hands on her hips. Chapter 3. I didn't know things could get any worse at home, but apparently they can. The apartment feels like the play The House of Bernarda Alba, but much less interesting. Just like the crazy and grieving mother, Amma keeps all the blinds and curtains drawn, which makes our cramped apartment even more stuffy and depressing. Because of my punishment for going into Olga's room, all I can do is read, draw, and write in my journal. Amma also took away my phone. I can't even close my bedroom door because she opens it as soon as I do. When I tell her I need privacy, she laughs and tells me I've become too Americanized. Privacy? I never had any privacy when I was a girl. You kids here think you can do whatever you want, she says. I don't even know what she thinks I might do if I'm alone in my room. There's no way I'd try touching myself with her yelling and lurking all the time. I don't bother looking out the window because all I can see is the building next door. And now I can't go into Olga's room, not even at night when they're sleeping, because Amma installed a lock and I can't find the key. I've looked everywhere. As soon as I can bust out of here, I'm going to the Continental Hotel to see if I can find anything about Olga. I've tried calling Angie about a million times from a landline, and she still hasn't called me back. She has to know something. I usually go inside my closet to cry so my parents don't hear me. Other times I just lie on my bed and stare at the ceiling, imagining the kind of life I want to have when I get older. I picture myself at the top of the Eiffel Tower, climbing pyramids in Egypt, dancing in the streets in Spain, riding in a boat in Venice, and walking on the Great Wall of China. In these dreams, I'm a famous writer who wears flamboyant scarves and travels all around the world, meeting fascinating people. No one tells me what to do. I go wherever I want and do whatever I please. Then I realize that I'm still in my tiny bedroom and can't even go outside. It's like a living death. I almost envy Olga, which I know is completely fucked up. If I tell Amma that I'm bored, she tells me to pick up a mop and start cleaning. She doesn't believe in boredom when there's so much to do around the house, as if cleaning the apartment were as entertaining as a day at the beach. When she says stuff like this, I feel the anger bubble in my guts. Sometimes I love her and sometimes I hate her. Mostly I feel a combination of both. I know it's wrong to hate your parents, especially when your sister is dead, but I can't help it, so I keep it to myself, and the resentment grows through me like weeds. I thought deaths were supposed to bring people together, but I guess that's just what happens on TV. I wonder if other people feel this way. I asked Lorena once, but she said, "No, how could I possibly hate my own mother? What was wrong with me?" But that's probably because her mom lets her do whatever the hell she wants. I don't like most of my teachers because they're as interesting as buckets of rocks. But English with Mr. Ingman is always fun. There's something about Mr. Ingman that I liked right away. He looks like a dorky suburban dad. But his eyes are friendly, and his weird, jagged laugh is kind of funny. And he treats us like we're adults, like he actually cares about what we think and feel. Most teachers talk down to us, as if we're a bunch of immature dummies who don't know anything about anything. I don't know if anyone's told Mr. Ingman about my dead sister, because he doesn't look at me as if I were some sad cripple. As soon as we sit down today, Mr. Ingman makes us write down our favorite word, and says we'll have to explain it to the rest of the class. I've loved words since I learned how to read, but I've never thought about my favorite ones. How can you choose just one? I don't know why such a simple task makes me so nervous. It takes me a few minutes to come up with anything. Then I can't stop. Dusk. Serenity. Flesh. Oblivious. Vespers. Serendipitous. Kaleidoscope. Dazzle. Wisteria. Hieroglyphics. Sputter. By the time Mr. Ingman gets to me, I finally decide on wisteria.
So what's yours, Julia?
Mr. Ingman nods toward me. He always says my name exactly how I pronounce it, the Spanish way. Yes, well, I had a lot of words, but in the end, I picked wisteria.
What do you like about that word?
Mr. Ingman sits on his desk and leans forward. I don't know. It's a flower, and it just sounds beautiful. Also, it rhymes with hysteria, which I think is kind of cool. And maybe this sounds weird, but when I say it, I like the way it feels in my mouth. I regret that last part because all the guys start laughing. I should have known. Mr. Ingman shakes his head.
Come on, guys. Let's show Julia some respect. I expect you all to be kind to each other in this class. If you can't do that, I'll ask you to leave. Understand?
The class quiets down. After we get through everyone, Mr. Ingman asks us why he made us do this exercise. A few people shrug, but no one says anything.
The words you choose can tell us a lot about yourself, he says. In this class, I want you to learn to appreciate... Wait, no. I want you to love language. Not only will I expect you to read difficult texts and learn how to analyze them in smart and surprising ways, I expect you to learn hundreds of new words. See, I'm teaching you standard English, which is the language of power. What does that mean?
Mr. Ingman raises his eyebrows and looks around the room.
Anyone?
The room is silent. I want to answer, but I'm too embarrassed. I see Leslie smirk next to me. What a jerk. She always looks like she's just sniffed a dirty diaper.
It means that you will learn to speak and write in a way that will give you authority. Does that mean that the way you speak in your neighborhood is wrong? That slang is bad? That you can't say on fleek or whatever you kids are saying these days? Absolutely not. That form of speaking is often fun, inventive, and creative. But would it be helpful to speak that way in a job interview? Unfortunately not. I want you to think about these things. I want you to think about words in a way you've never done before. I want you to leave this class with the tools to compete with kids in the suburbs because you're just as capable, just as smart.
After Mr. Ingman gives us a short lesson on the importance of American literature, the bell rings. This is definitely my favorite class. On Saturday morning, Ama is making flour tortillas. I can smell the dough and hear the rolling pin from my bedroom when I wake up. Sometimes Ama lies in bed all day, and other times she's in a cooking and cleaning frenzy. It's impossible to predict. I know she's going to make me help her, so I stay in bed reading until she forces me to get up.
Get up, huevona!
I hear her yelling from the other room. Ama calls me huevona all the time. She says I don't have the right to be tired because I don't work cleaning houses all day like she does. I guess she has a point. But it's a weird thing to call a girl if you really think about it. Huevos means eggs, so it means that your eggs, balls, are so big that they drag you down and make you lazy. Telling a girl her balls are too heavy is bizarre, but I never point this out because I know it will piss her off. After I brush my teeth and wash my face, I go to the kitchen. Ama has already covered the table and counters with rolled-out tortillas. She's bent over the table, stretching a little ball of dough into a perfect circle.
"Put on an apron and start heating these up," Ama says, pointing to the tortillas scattered throughout the kitchen.
"How do I know when they're done?"
"You just know."
I don't know what that means.
What kind of girl doesn't know when a tortilla is done?
She looks irritated already.
Me! I don't. Please just tell me.
You'll figure it out. It's common sense.
I study the tortillas as they heat on the comal and try to flip them before they burn. When I turn the first one, I see that I've left it too long. That side is almost burned. Ama tells me that the second one is too pale, that I have to leave it on longer. But when I do, it gets too crisp. When I burn the third one completely, Ama sighs and tells me to roll them out instead, while she heats them. I take her rolling pin and try my best to shape the little balls into circles. Most of them end up in weird shapes, no matter how much I try to fix them.
"That one looks like a chancla," Ama says, looking at my worst one.
"It's not perfect, but it doesn't look like a slipper."
Jesus.
I feel myself grow more and more frustrated. I take a deep breath. I don't want to fight with her because I heard her crying in their bedroom last night.
"They have to be perfect."
"Why? We're just going to eat them. Why does it matter if they're not in perfect shape?"
"If you're going to do something, you have to do it right, or else you shouldn't do it at all," Ama says, turning back to the stove. "Olga's were always so nice and round."
"I don't care about Olga's tortillas," I say, throwing off my apron. "I've had enough. I don't care about any of this crap. I don't see the point of going through all this trouble when we can buy them at the store."
"Get back here," Ama yells after me. "What kind of woman are you going to be if you can't even make a tortilla?"
After 2 weeks of no TV, no phone, and no going out whatsoever, Ama says maybe she'll end my punishment today. Little does she know that I'm going to the Continental after school. I'm tired of waiting for permission to go anywhere, and something about Olga is driving me crazy. Maybe I can convince Lorena to go with me. I put on bright red lipstick, my favorite black dress, red fishnets, and black Chuck Taylors. I flat iron my hair until it falls straight down my back. I don't even care that I look kind of fat, or have a giant pimple throbbing on my chin. I'm going to try my best to have a good day. Well, as good as it can be when your sister is dead and you feel like you might lose your mind at any moment. When Ama sees me come out of my room, she makes the sign of the cross and doesn't say anything. That's what she does when she hates what I'm wearing, or I say something weird, which is always. I put the leather journal Olga gave me for Christmas in my backpack. It was one of the most thoughtful gifts I've ever received. I guess even when it didn't seem like it, Olga was always paying attention. When Ama drops me off at school, she kisses me on the cheek and reminds me that we have to start looking for a dress, that I can't show up to my party looking like I worship Satan. Lorena meets me at my locker and gives me a hug before class. Sometimes I don't know how Lorena and I are still best friends. We're so different and look like complete opposites. People even look at us funny when they see us together. She likes spandex and bright and crazy patterns and colors. She wears leggings as pants. I prefer band t-shirts, jeans, and dark dresses. Most of the clothes in my closet are black, gray, or red. When I started listening to new wave and indie, Lorena got into hip-hop and R&B. We always argue about music. And everything else, for that matter.